the deepest, darkest crypts, to the backwoods swamp where you hit the bottom, from the inside of your castle, to the fears lodged deep inside your subconscious. It's time for a big, scary show.
This is Freddy K at Crypticon. You're listening to the Big Scary Show.
Ah! Hey, this is Bob from the original Pumpkin Teeth, giving a big shout out, hey, to the Big Scary Show.
Hi, this is Craig Hines from DarkImaginings.com, and you're listening to the Big Scary Show.
Hi, it's Jeff Johnson with Frightmares, Buck Hill in Burnsville, Minnesota, and you're listening to The Big Scary Show.
Hi, this is Paul Allen from Frightmares at Buck Hill in Burnsville, Minnesota, and you're listening to The Big Scary Show.
Hi, this is Gene Sockness from Nightmare Hollow Scream Park in Forest Lake, Minnesota, on The Big Scary Show.
Hi, this is Brian with Grave Tone Productions, and you are listening to The Big Scary Show.
This is Mike from Verse 13, and you are listening to The Big Scary Show.
You're listening to The Big Scary Show with three big scary men and one that wears more makeup than I do.
This week, on an all-new Big Scary Show, Haunt Season 2013 is in full swing, and we bring you another set of interviews from haunt owners from across the country. This time we hit haunts in Wisconsin and Minnesota to find out how they do things in the upper Midwest. Of course, ski slopes are involved. The unknown scare actor talks to Bob B. Connor of Pumpkin Teeth, and we get the lowdown on this very fun and interesting way to decorate your jack-o'-lanterns. He definitely puts the bite back into pumpkins. Storm celebrates the opening of the Trails to Terror in Rhode Island by ranting in a haunt minute. The unknown scare actor makes you face your fears here and at the Dent Schoolhouse. The Haunt Rocker continues bringing you the haunting music that we love to hear during October. Badger brings you the deadline news of the day. The Roundtable of Terror talks to Craig Hines of Dark Imaginings and discusses his book, Gateway of the Gods, which just might have you questioning your sense of reality. All this, plus more, only on The Big Scary Show.
Hello everybody, Drew Badger here live at Crypticon, Minneapolis, Minnesota. We're having a good old time here and we're chatting out with some of the vendors and everything, and it looks like I'm standing in front of a row of masks. I see a big old creepy crawler. It looks like it could be nothing more than Frightmares at Buck Hill, a great haunted attraction built into a ski resort, if my information is correct. I got Jeff and I got Paul here. How are you guys doing?
Fantastic.
Tell us a little bit about Frightmares at Buck Hill. Buck Hill obviously is a ski area in the air, but what is Frightmares at Buck Hill?
Frightmares is Minnesota's premier haunted attraction. There are four different attractions on site. There are three houses. There's an outdoor experience. Come and make a night of it. So we've got Tucker's open for dinner before, drinks afterward. Go through the attractions and they have the night of your life.
And when you say four separate attractions, I mean, does one ticket get you in? Do you have to buy separate tickets for all that stuff? How does that work out?
One ticket, you can go through each attraction as many times as you like.
Ooh, we like those.
Oh, yes.
So how did the idea come about to put a haunted house at, of all things, a ski resort?
They had been toying around with the idea for about 10 years. They've put their research into it. They hired all the right people to really bring a big scare factor to the haunt, as well as great design, creative people.
Great production. We actually set up with Jonathan Horton, who is...
Name
the,
sounds familiar.
Yeah, the creative director. He's been part of Enemy Mine, The Fly, Deep Blue Sea, and coming soon, Anchorman 2. So
he did Shark Night in 3D.
He did.
Oh, my God.
In 3D.
Excellent. And he is your creative director, then. Does he build all the things, just design all the stuff?
Yes. In fact, yes, last year we had a tragedy. One of our houses actually burned, and we have redesigned that house to take the original haunt to another level lower. Yeah. And then Jonathan's also put together a whole new storyline that goes along with the hill by adding some, as you can see by the...
There's a really cool mask and a lot of very, shall we say, animal-inspired type creatures and things here. You know, it translates great to radio, obviously.
Yeah, exactly. Like my face.
Let's not talk about that. So anyway, how long have you guys been around, and how was the season last year, and things that are going on for the future?
This is our fifth year. Things are looking great. Last year we did have the tragedy where we lost one of our attractions.
And, you know, I don't know how it was here, but around the country it was generally considered a very bad year. There was a lot of bad weather. There was the economy, the election. Nobody was spending money. So did you guys do well despite the tragedy of the fire?
No.
Okay. You can say that.
In spite of it, yes, we did. We expected the general public would perceive that as, well, now they have only three quarters of what they had last year. Our staff was able to put a new haunt in its place, or a new attraction in its place, in less than 10 days.
Wow.
Backstory, actors, and it was reasonably successful.
Excellent.
For having 10 days of lead time, it was phenomenal.
Is that going to continue this year, or have you redesigned that again with Jonathan Horton's thing?
We've redesigned. Okay. The redesign to bring back the previous attraction. Nice. To a whole new level.
For anybody interested, if you're in the greater Minnesota, Wisconsin, the Dakotas, and you want to make a trip out to Buck Hill and check out this stuff before the snow comes, which is probably, I don't know, tomorrow, how can they get a hold of it? Websites, social medias, information, tickets, and all that good stuff.
Frightmares.com is the website.
So you're the guy that's got Frightmares.com. Oh, my God. That, you know, how many different Frightmares are out there, and you've got the .com. Awesome.
And we've got it. all of the contact information is on there. This year we also have group packages. So there are discounts of groups, I think, of 12 or more. Call for more information. I do know that 30 or more, there's a party room included for free.
Nice.
So we love big groups of people. Great for company outings, great for social gatherings and everything else.
Church groups, community groups, scouts, Girl Scouts. I mean, we've got them all that come through. So it's a lot of fun.
Excellent.
The groups are
excellent. Well, gentlemen, I wish you nothing but success for the year 2013 at Frightmares at Buck Hill. You know, a lot of people opened up like Friday the 13th, and I've heard just offhand and around the numbers are actually much, much better than last year. So hopefully 2013 is going to be a great year for you guys as well as everywhere around the country. So I wish you guys nothing but success for this year. My name is Drew Badger. I am at Crypticon in Minneapolis, Minnesota for the Big Scary Show, and I am out. Join your fellow haunt owners, actors, and enthusiasts in Texas this November for the Legendary Haunt Tour. Happening November 8th and 9th, the Legendary Haunt Tour will be visiting the House of Torment in Austin and the 13th floor in San Antonio. One ticket price includes tours of all locations, transportation, and two evening parties. Tickets are now on sale, so don't miss out. Get your tickets, schedules, hotel reservations, and much, much more at LegendaryHauntTour.com. It's not just good, it's legendary.
Verse 13. Empty Coffin on the Big Scary Show.
from the darkest reaches of the earth. This is the Haunt Minute. And now, with this week's commentary, Storm.
All right. Buckle up, folks, because we have a rant for the ages. What I want to talk about is this whole thing, sign a petition for National Haunted Attraction Day. And everybody's like, this is a great idea. Everyone can get behind this. We can do this. This is awesome. I am the voice in the wilderness. I am the one who's going to say this idea
sucks. Absolutely sucks. First of all, petitions suck. They are the most ridiculous thing out there. If you want to not be taken seriously, go out there and start a petition. You know why? Mickey Mouse and Donald Duck is on every single one. They're not serious, stupid, and they get nothing done. And you know why they don't get anything done? This national holiday thing, and you gotta sign 250,000 to have Congress do it? Guess what? In 1957, Congress gave it up! They don't even do it anymore! You know who you go to for this? You go to McGraw-Hill. There are 13,000 national days in book form. That's right, just like Name a Star, $100, Name a Star, in book form. That's all these national days are. There's nothing to do with Congress, nothing to do with a petition. So hope you know where those names are going. And finally, why does the haunted attraction industry even want a national day? Especially the second Saturday in October. That's a busy day as it is, because 5 out of 7 times it falls on Columbus Day weekend. The only reason why anybody ever does anything for these stupid made-up national days is to get something free. I'm not giving out anything free at my haunt the busiest weekend we have. Doesn't make sense. And I'm not going to have the climax of my haunt season the second weekend of October. No, it's the last weekend of October. You know what? We already got a national holiday. It's called Halloween. Get your ass to a haunt. Enjoy it, because when Halloween comes, done for the year, you missed out. We don't need a national holiday. Other people in the entertainment industry wish they could be the haunt attraction industry. We are the badasses of entertainment. People will pay money for us to scare them and make them piss their pants and be happy about it. Again, people pay us money to scare them so bad they piss their pants. Why do we need to jump on a bandwagon and have some goofy national holiday? We've worked hard to make this industry serious, for people to understand it and know it's a real thing, not just a hobby, not just a bunch of people out there. But no, let's all immediately get behind some stupid publicity stunt with a petition. You know what? If you think this is a good idea, but you're against that naked haunt thing that was going on, guess what? Both are publicity stunts, both are dumb ideas, and both leave out anything that this haunt attraction industry has been pushing to do. And, you know, one last thing, if you've been supporting it, well, guess what? You just flipped the big middle number one to every home haunter out there, too. Because they're not good enough to be part of National Haunt Attraction Day. We want something better in Halloween, and you home haunters can't participate. That's why that idea sucks.
And until next time, keep every minute scary.
Tune in next episode for another Haunt Minute. And in the meantime, share your opinions on the Big Scary Show Facebook page and on Twitter at Big Scary Storm.
Hey, this is Josh Gates from Sci-Fi's Destination Truth, encouraging you to check out HauntMinute.com.
This idea sucks. Absolutely sucks.
Are you a fan of the alternative lifestyle? Do you like horror films and gaming reviews? How about Drop Dead Gorgeous Ladies? If you answered yes, then you need to check out Stiff Mag. Stiff Mag is a bi-monthly horror, alternative culture, and entertainment publication that features our horror film reviews, our tech from the crypt, and graveyard gaming features, killer reading, literary features, music reviews, columns, and of course, our beautiful graveyard girls. For subscription information, visit stiffmag.com. That's stiffmag.com.
Greetings, mortals, and anything else listening. Welcome to the Big Scary Show's Deadline News. We have news on our 1700th like. The Big Scary Show would like to congratulate Grant James Marsden of London, UK, for being our 1700th like on Facebook. Thank you, Grant. Keep listening to the show and tell all your friends. We have news on the Greensboro, North Carolina Zombie Walk and Prom. The 2013 Greensboro Zombie Walk and Prom combines the decadent fun of a high school prom with the best of a traditional zombie walk. Participants don zombie attire, pour on the fake blood, and devour drinks and snacks after shuffling around downtown Greensboro, North Carolina. They walk like the living dead and party like there's no tomorrow. The first Greensboro Zombie Walk and Prom was a huge success, and we know this year's event will be even bigger. Zombies can create their own costumes or stagger on into a costume store. Must-haves include fake blood and gore, ripped or tattered clothes, and a strong desire to turn the Night of the Living Dead into a rocking fun Night of the Living Dead. No more will zombies be confined to B-movies and comic books. They're coming. It's a dead man's party. Saturday, October 12, 2013, join the massive hordes of the undead, be part of the swarm of zombies to descend on downtown Greensboro, and party through the night at the biggest gathering of the undead ever seen. Make sure to sign up for information on the Greensboro Zombie Walk and Prom Facebook page at facebook.com/Greensboro Zombie Walk and like them for full updates on this once-in-a-lifetime or dead-time event. Join the night that may just mark the end of the world as you know it, and you'll love it. More info and map of the event can also be found at www.gsozombie.com. We have this news from the Sinister Point Haunted Attraction in Brea, California. Attention, scare actors wanted for one night only. Sinister Point is casting for a special private event for one night only in the LA area. This is happening Saturday, October 26, 2013, from 6 to 11 p.m. at a location to be announced. You must be 18 and over and be able to attend one rehearsal date. We will be casting for specific roles, looks, and talents, such as chainsaw handlers, tall and skinny, and more. Most roles will require you to wear high-end silicone masks provided by Immortal Masks. Please email events@sinisterpoint.com with the following information: your talents, haunt history, if any, a headshot, and a full body shot. And serious inquiries only, please. We have this news from the Downtown Lakeland Zombie Fest in Lakeland, Florida. The undead return to Downtown Lakeland, Florida on October 12th for Zombie Fest Resurrection. Featuring a headliner haunted alley by our friends at the Shallow Grave, live music from Smoke Point, an expanded selection of vendors, an expanded kids zone, and much, much more. Sponsor, vendor, and volunteer slots are still available. Visit their website at downtownlakelandzombies.com for additional info or to register. We have some news on an interesting petition circulating around the internet. Haunted house attractions are widely attended during the month of October by millions of Americans, collectively generating hundreds of millions of dollars in revenue and having a positive effect on the U.S. economy each year. Our mission is to establish National Haunted House Day, recognizing haunted houses and their contribution to small business, job creation, and the arts. National Haunted House Day not only recognizes this great industry, but additionally serves as a conduit of fundraising for charitable projects and community foundations, as artists, business owners, community leaders, and as a united family sharing a common vision and passion for an industry. We ask that National Haunted House Day be declared by the White House and recognized each year on the second Friday in October. You can sign the petition by going to www.petitions.whitehouse.gov. We have news from the Atlanta Zombie Apocalypse. The creators of the Atlanta Zombie Apocalypse once again have gone to great lengths to bring you the newest and most exciting, fully immersive Halloween horror attractions where you take part in realistic zombie apocalypse scenarios. You will be terrified. You will run for your life. You will feel like you are living in the zombie apocalypse as you play a role to survive. Will you make it? People have had heart attacks, soiled their pants, took the chicken exit after the first room. What will you do when the zombies come for you? It's the return of the curse of the undead. Last year, strange sights were reported, including secret societies, human sacrifices, and the dead rising from the ground in the deep, dark woods. No records remain, as police reports have all since been destroyed. A few survivors and researchers have returned to the site to search the 100-room abandoned motel and 4 acres of woods to learn what really happened those nights. Join this group and seek the truth behind the Order of the Grave to find out what evil makes the dead rise. What is it? You're better off not knowing what's inside. What will you do? Who can you trust? Can you find the way out? Will you survive? You'll get an airsoft gun with 100 rounds. You enter the abandoned motel. You shoot attacking zombies as you make your way through the dark rooms and hallways. Aim for the head. We can only permit groups of 2 or 3 in at a time, so ticket numbers are limited for this attraction. Online ticket information is available soon. This year, if you purchase tickets in advance and print them out, you'll be able to skip the box office line. More information? Go to AtlantaZombie.com. We have some convention news from Spooky Empire in Orlando, Florida. Spooky Empire has quickly become one of the most respected horror event promotion companies in the United States, bringing to life 2 of the most popular horror conventions in the nation, with fans attending from all over the world. October's event, the Ultimate Horror Weekend, is coming October 25th through the 27th and has grown significantly since its modest start in Fort Lauderdale in 2003. After finding a permanent home in Orlando, it has become one of the largest horror conventions in the nation, with more and more fans attending each year. Just when you think the show can't be topped, Spooky Empire brings it bigger and better for the next year. Each show is more monstrous than the last. The name describes it perfectly. It is the ultimate weekend for horror fans of all ages. Where else can you meet and mingle with your favorite horror movie and TV stars? Buy any collectible you can imagine from your choice of over 200 vendors and artists. See new and upcoming films as well as your old favorites. Take part in one of the largest zombie walks. Get tattooed by some of the best artists from around the world. And of course, party till your heart's content or until you puke. And that doesn't even list half of the events that go on during this nonstop weekend of horrors. Special guests for this include Doug Bradley, Tom Savini, Patricia Quinn from the Rocky Horror Show, a reunion of the cast of the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Kane Hodder, Dee Snider, and many, many more. For information, visit www.spookyempire.com. We have some information about the Spooky Movie International Horror Film Festival. Founded in 2006, the Spooky Movie International Horror Film Festival is Washington, D.C.'s only genre-based film festival. Recognized as one of D.C.'s premier festival events, as well as the world's premier horror film festival, from badlit.com, Spooky Fest works closely with our partners to offer year-round screenings of feature and short films, in addition to our signature festival event every October. For our 2013 festival, happening October 10th through the 19th, they're screening 22 features and 30 shorts over the course of 10 nights, making this the most ambitious festival ever, and once more they're doing it in style at the legendary AFI Silver Theater and Cultural Center in Silver Spring, Maryland, one of the top venues in the entire country devoted to the moving image. For more information, tickets, and a list of films being screened, visit SpookyFest.com. We have news on the Twin Cities Zombie Hunt. The first Twin Cities Zombie Hunt will have thousands of in attendance over the course of several weeks in Forest Lake in Columbus, Minnesota. Paintball stations equipped with paintball guns will be set up on a mobile trailer. As the trailer maneuvers through the playing field, attendees will shoot live zombie actors and shooting props with glow-in-the-dark paintballs, artistically whirring through the dark of night, splattering squarely on the evil zombies. NOC Paintball will be unveiling for the very first time the highly anticipated glow-in-the-dark paintballs, which has even the most hardcore paintballers eager to check out this event. The new glowing paintball technology utilizes an adapter which activates the paintball, creating a tracer after every single shot. The event will be held the 4th, 5th, 11th, 12th, 16th through the 20th, and 23rd through the 31st of October. This event will continue in November through the 2nd. Events kick off each night at 7 p.m., a great way to try paintballing and not get shot. All paintball equipment will be provided. And for group ticket sales, please call 651-560-6627 or email tickets@TwinCitiesZombieHunt.com. Tickets are available at TwinCitiesZombieHunt.com as well. The 2013 Minnesota Twin Cities Zombie Hunt will be the most exciting and unique event of the year. We have this news from Dark Meadows Manor in Preston, Idaho. We have a huge announcement. We have finalized a deal to have a small carnival at the resort for the whole month of October during our Haunted House Dark attraction. Riverdale Resort is going to be the place to be this fall for all ages. Here's a list of what we'll have in store for you. Our famous hot water pools for soaking, snacks, nachos, popcorn, hot dogs, chips, hot chocolate, candy, and much more. Carnival rides, roller coasters, scrambler, and more. And Halloween-themed carnival games. All of this is available all October long. Call 208-852-0266 or message their Facebook page for details, which is facebook.com/Dark Meadows Manor. And finally, we have this news from Leonard Pickle via Facebook. Quote, do you want to be as famous as people from Duck Dynasty? Well, here is your chance. I have been asked to help a producer of a reality TV show that would spotlight haunted attractions across the country. They are looking for haunted attraction events that are struggling to survive, haunters who are sacrificing everything to be in the business, and characters who have interesting backstories and personalities that would make good entertainment for the show. If you fit all of these qualifications, or know someone who does, and are interested in bearing your dirty laundry for the world to see and comment on, then shoot me an email to leonardpickle@gmail.com, along with a brief description of your haunted event, your backstory, and photos of you and your event. A video sizzle reel of you and your haunt would be a huge help as well. I will forward this on to the producer, and he will select the events to be on the show. Please get them to me in the next week or two at the latest. Good luck. Unquote. Remember, folks, if you have news about the haunt, horror, or Halloween industry, please send it to us at news@bigscaryshow.com, and we'll get it on the air. No news is too big or too small. This concludes this edition of the Big Scary Show's Deadline News. Tired of surfing all over the web to find the latest haunt news? Why sift through hours of those VideoTube channels trying to find the latest how-to videos? Isn't there an easier way? Of course there is! Introducing HauntersDigest.com. With HauntersDigest.com, just one click will put a world of haunt information at your fingertips. From the latest news, to vendor information, to video tutorials. And don't forget the soon-to-be world-famous Haunt Brief, which takes a deeper look into many aspects of the industry. There's even a directory of over 800 haunted attractions, so you can find the right one for you. Still not convinced? There's even columns written by many experts in the industry covering a wide range of topics. Rumor has it a certain member of a particular podcast might even write for HauntersDigest.com. As an extra bonus, you can follow them on Twitter and Facebook. For more information, visit www.hauntersdigest.com today.
And ladies and gentlemen, it is that time that we like to call Let's Give Away a Great Prize, courtesy of Screamline Studios. Yes, indeed, it is time to see if we have a winner for the gruesome giveaway for the month of September. You know how this works. We threw a question out there on the last show. People have been sending us email entries left and right. We picked a randomly selected email, and I believe we have a potential caller on the line. Potential caller, what's your name? Where are you located?
This would be Mike Pearson. I'm calling you from Pembroke, Massachusetts.
Mike Pearson, Pembroke, Massachusetts. Great to have somebody up from the old Northwest. You know how this works. You listen to the show. You send in an email with the potential answer of the gruesome giveaway. Let's find out if you know the answer. So let me ask you two quick little legal questions. One, have we contacted you in any way, shape, or form other than to give you contact instructions on calling in?
No, you have not.
Okay, and two, have you tried to bribe us with anything, send us money, or anything like that to increase your chances of winning?
Definitely not.
Okay, great. All right, this is for the marbles here for the September Gruesome Giveaway. The question we asked was, what is the name of the new attraction at the Dent Schoolhouse?
That should be the Queen City Slaughter Yard.
Congratulations, Mike Pearson of Pembroke, Massachusetts. You are absolutely correct. It is the Queen City Slaughter Yard, already getting rave reviews at the Dent Schoolhouse. From what I have heard, the unknown scare actor, as you all know, does work out there. So if you will hang on the line for a few moments, we'll get some contact information on where to ship your prize. Once again, congratulations to Mike Pearson. Mike, do you work at a haunted attraction?
I do, actually. I work at Barrett's Haunted Mansion in Abington, Massachusetts.
Barrett's, we've had them on the news once or twice before. Excellent. You know, website? Want to give them a free plug?
Yes, the website is www.bhmansion.com, and it's a really great time. We actually opened our second attraction this year for the first time. It's called The Cell, and it's getting some good reviews so far. So anyone who's listening to this, if they have a chance to check it out, we'd greatly appreciate it. It's a good time.
Excellent. So if you're up in the Abington, Massachusetts area, go check out Barrett's Haunted Mansion. Well, once again, Mike Pearson, thank you very much for being a listener to The Big Scary Show. Congratulations. We'll be shipping your prize out in the next few days. Be sure to tell all your friends to keep listening, and everybody else out there, keep listening for your chance to win the next gruesome giveaway here on The Big Scary Show.
Gentlemen, it is that time of the show that we like to call the Round Table of Terror. And we had this gentleman on way back around the time of Transworld. He was a new vendor at Transworld, had him on there, and an interesting twist in the conversation revealed that he wrote a very, very fascinating book. And if you're one of those kind of people that like to stay up late night and listen to things like Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie, or watch Ancient Aliens and watch all those cool shows on the Discovery Channel that aren't about, you know, gator hunting or something, then you might find this to be a very interesting roundtable. It might be a little controversial. It might not, depending on how you perceive reality itself. We're going to talk to Craig Hines. A lot of you people know who Craig Hines is. He's the founder of Dark Imaginings, who does some really cool stuff with portraits and graphics and a little thing he likes to call augmented reality. But he wrote a book called Gateway of the Gods, basically talking about ancient history, mythology, world religions that can have you basically questioning your beliefs and stuff. And so, you know, we said we'd have Craig back, so break out your Reynolds wrap it around your head, and be sure to tune in for what promises to be a very interesting conversation. We've got Craig Hines on the line out in the Pittsburgh area. Are you there, Craig?
Yes, I am, and complete with my tinfoil hat.
Excellent. So we don't want the rays interfering with signals that you may be getting. And, of course, we always have our hosts, including Storm.
I have my tinfoil line squid hat on.
The unknown scare actor.
I'm taking my chances.
Unfortunately, due to some technical difficulties, the Haunt Rocker was not able to join us tonight. Maybe they got him. We don't know. We'll have to tune into the next show to see. My name is Drew Badger. Not only am I wearing a tinfoil hat, but tinfoil socks as well. But we've got Craig Hines talking Gateway to Gods. Craig, in a nutshell, the book itself. I mean, I've just started reading it. You had some very interesting experiences as a child, and it kind of, I'm guessing, it kind of skewed your sense of what is and what isn't?
Yeah, I mean, I've always been interested in the paranormal and things like that, you know, just growing up watching television shows like The X-Files or Sightings that, you know, or Unsolved Mysteries that all dealt with the occasional paranormal stories and real-life encounters.
Loved watching those myself.
Yeah, so, I mean, I was always sort of aware of things like that, and I found it fascinating. And I never quite had certain stories. Like, I've heard so many people have told me about their encounters, you know, whether they believe they were abducted by aliens or things like that. So I can't quite say that I've ever had those kinds of experiences where, you know, there was anything that solidly I could commit to and say, yes, this, yeah, this clearly happened. But I did have some events that did make me question things, and It was during that time that I was doing a lot of research into the different topics that eventually became the book. And so it was sort of a guiding force, if you will, that it just felt like I was on a path of writing about a topic that other people had discussed and was actually out there in other books and media. But it really felt to me like a lot of the people were either missing the mark or they were being purposely led astray. And so I sort of set out with the goal of writing everything and just getting a collection of as many of the facts and information and trying to remove as much of the bias and any sort of skewed assessment of the material, because that was my big problem encountering a lot of it where you mentioned shows, you know, like Ancient Aliens and things. Well, before that show ever became popular, you know, since like the 60s and 70s, there were authors like Eric von Daniken and Zechariah Sitchin that had popularized such, you know, ideas in the general public. And, you know, so those were some of the topics that for a time there, I thought there might be something to it. But, you know, as I did further research and stuff, I started catching on to how these people were manipulating the information or they weren't being truthful in their credentials and other things. So it was basically my goal in writing the book was to go for all of the actual scholarly material, anything that I could find. So I actually bought Akkadian dictionaries and Sumerian lexicons and the Strong's Bible Concordance and all sorts of computer tools and things like that to analyze the text and go on what actual scholars said about the text and then put that together. And what I actually found quite amazing was that my actual theories and things fit everything that the scholars were saying. I didn't have to actually say that, you know, like, for instance, Sitchin or von Daniken were like, well, it says gods and, you know, and angels, but they really meant aliens. Well, you know, I didn't have to do that with any of my theories, and it still fit with what all the scholars were saying. So that was sort of the genesis of it, was doing the research into this to try and, in my own way, set the record straight, so to speak.
Did you start finding patterns in these books? Did any of these books kind of tie into each other?
Well, yeah, a great deal. And it is interesting whenever you say about the patterns, because that was some of what I found the most interesting was the symbolism and patterns that you could find in a lot of these ancient texts. Because during those times they had what were known as the mystery schools, and those were, you know, were the groups, they would be initiated into these groups and they were taught sacred knowledge. A lot of this also was referred to as like sacred geometry and things. So you had like the schools of Pythagoras and other ones, the Gnostic Christians or just the Gnostics in general. And so you would find that there was a lot of information embedded within their teachings, but whenever you actually read the text, you have to, if you didn't know these secret teachings, then you were just reading the surface story that everyone else, you hear a nice little parable or something like that. But if you actually understood the symbolism and the meanings and the numbers that were embedded in there, then you would take away a different meaning. So, for instance, in the New Testament, whenever one of the disciples says to Jesus, you know, well, why do you talk to the people, you know, with parables? And he says, well, to them, they don't have the knowledge, you know, so I speak to them in parables. But to you, I have taught you the knowledge of heaven. And so it makes a lot of sense whenever you think about the actual Gospels themselves were done in the same way. So, for instance, there's the story about how the disciples were trying to catch fish, and they were having difficulty. And then Jesus appears on the shore and says, cast the net to the other side. And so whenever they do that, it says, it could have said they caught a lot of fish, and that could have just been the miracle of it, because they trusted in Jesus and they caught their fish. But actually what it says is that whenever they caught the fish, they caught 153 fish. Now, if you had knowledge about like the Greek mystery schools and things like that, you would know that the reason why it has the number 153 in there is because that was known as the measure of the fish. And it was part of a mathematical ratio of drawing two interlocking circles. And 153 was part of that ratio. So, and that's also why the fish was a symbol associated with Jesus. So there's all sorts of things in there where they're passing along certain information. And part of my idea was that if you start looking at all the cultures all around the world, they all have very similar stories, stories about a great flood and global catastrophe that nearly wiped out the human race, and that part of how it was sort of intervened was because people had been in this contact experience with what they referred to as gods or angels. You can find that all around the world. The stories vary, and that's to be expected as they get passed down and traded amongst each other during those times. But the basic core of the stories, though, are all very similar. And so part of what I was curious about was if they were actually in contact with some sort of ancient race, call them whatever you will, that might have had advanced knowledge at the time, perhaps the best way that if they knew that the planet goes through global catastrophic cycles, then they would know about that, and so they would try to embed that kind of information into the historical record. So languages and everything like that change over time. None of us are speaking, you know, ancient Sumerian or ancient Hebrew nowadays. But mathematical formula and symbols do translate across time like that, and they can still hold true. So what I was under the impression was perhaps that these actual symbols and numbers were embedded in the ancient text so that they would be preserved through time, so that whenever the human race became advanced enough to actually understand some of this information, that we would have some of the clues right there before us, and that's how it was passed along.
Now, this sort of ties in a question that I've always had is, and you kind of touched on it with the transcultural differences. You know, I've always wondered why there were pyramids in Egypt, and yet there's also very similar periods in Mexico and China running pretty much along the same latitude, but yet continents apart and things like that. Is this kind of sort of tie into that?
Where... Well, yeah, it does. There are sometimes dispute, like sometimes people say that, you know, make certain connections about it, you know, being along the same latitude. And in some cases, it probably is. In other cases, some of the researchers that put that information out haven't actually done the actual research on it. But that's sort of beside the point. But the key of it, though, is that, as we said, they do have all these similar stories and experiences, and one of the major physical connections we have are that the vast majority of the ancient world actually did build these pyramids, whether you had the Egyptian pyramids or you had the Sumerian and Akkadian ziggurats, which were stepped pyramids. You can also find those in China. You can find them in Mesoamerica. So in almost all cases, the reason why they said that they built these pyramids was because they said that they were the symbolic link representing the cosmic mountain, which in all the ancient lore was the mountain that united heaven and earth, and that at the top of the cosmic mountain, that was where the link was and where the gods would be able to come from heaven and come to earth. And so whenever they built, for instance, the ziggurats in Babylon, they would say, if you read their ancient text, they said that at the top of the ziggurat, the gods of heaven would appear, and they would even have, you know, a priestess or a virgin that was there as an offering to basically have sexual relations with these gods, which gets into the whole idea of the interbreeding and stuff that is also prevalent throughout the ancient mythology, dealing with the fallen angels known as the Watchers or the Grigori, and interbreeding with humans and creating the hybrid race known as the Nephili.
Right. Half the people you study in mythology in high school are, you know, Zeus had sex with a woman and Hercules, or, you know, Perseus and Theseus and things like that. So somewhat that, superhuman, but not yet on a godlike level.
Yeah, they were part divine and part human. And so you find these same stories all throughout the ancient world. And as I said, you know, a lot of times the links with these pyramids was that they said that that's what these pyramids were supposed to be representing, were these cosmic mountains where the gods first appeared, because in the ancient text it says that the Watchers, which were these angels, first appeared at, you know, Mount Hermon. And so that's where they came down and started cohabitating with humans. And even the literal meaning of Babylon was gateway of the gods. It was Bab-El or Bab-Ili. Which meant gateway of the gods. And so that's even where my book gets its title from, is the idea of, if you start looking, they keep referring to these gateways to heaven. For instance, Jacob's ladder. Whenever you hear the story, you know, people refer to it as Jacob's ladder, but if you actually read the biblical text and study the footnotes and the language, you see that it says it's not actually a ladder. It's more likely a stairway or ramp, as in a ziggurat, which is, you know, from that time and era. And so whenever Jacob is having this dream vision, he's saying that at the top of it, he saw the angels and God appear at the top of it, and they were coming and going. And you get all these other ancient accounts where it says that, you know, for instance, Enoch was taken and he was translated into heaven. And I found that very interesting because it doesn't say he was just transported or anything. In one of the translations, it specifically says he was translated into heaven, meaning that he was his bodily form was transformed. And it even says that, you know, all his flesh was dissolved and then he was reformed. And, you know, and that's how he entered the heavenly realm. And then and he was interacting with the angels on their own turf, so to speak. And so the book gets into all this material, the idea of the theoretical quantum physics of the gateways and things. And I can't stress this enough, too, is, you know, because so many people think that, you know, well, I'm hard set on this is the actual truth. And it's like, I don't know. Part of the reason I wrote the book was because I found a lot of connections and a lot of correlations with all this, but it was nothing that I myself could prove. So basically what I set out to do was to collect all the information, all the data, put it forth, connect the dots, and then have it out there for other people to read and see if maybe someone else can pick up the information or someone with knowledge in the fields of theoretical quantum physics or something could go, you know what, we need to conduct an experiment because maybe this could explain something.
There's just too many coincidences that seem to be popping up, it seems like.
Yeah.
Or too many patterns or things that could be interpreted as patterns, it sounds like.
Yeah, and so, I mean, I'm my own, you know, hardest skeptic, and I always encourage everyone else to be skeptical about it. But it's one of those where, like I said, as I was doing the research, I didn't actually have to change my theories or anything. You know, everything that I was laying out was already supported by the scholars and their translations and the meanings in the text. I never had to change anything. And so it sort of was helping to reaffirm the idea that maybe there is something to this and why I felt that it was important that to get that information out of there. Because if, after all, I mean, you know, with what is happening with, you know, the global climate and, you know, the intensity in storms and everything, you know, the planet has gone through extinction level events in the past. You know, whether or not people want to get into a political argument about, you know, global climate change and global warming and everything, you know, that doesn't matter. What's, you know, indisputable is that in the past our planet has gone through extinction level events, and, you know, to think that that couldn't happen again to us is just naive.
Sure.
So, you know, my thoughts are, if we have knowledge and we can figure out a way around this, and it's and the clues are actually hidden within our past, I think it's worthy of looking into.
Absolutely. I do want to take a quick pause here just to remind everybody you are listening to the Big Scary Show's Roundtable of Terror, a very fascinating conversation with Craig Hines, author of Gateway of the Gods and the founder of Dark Imaginings. We're going to take a quick break to throw some messages out there for you. We hope you'll listen to them, and then we'll be right back.
It's time to build your undead horde with the best-rated zombie props 2 years in a row. You'll find them at creepycollection.com, along with the scary creepy clown props, the frozen meat locker props, the deadly doll props, the creepy killer props, and the deadly deal life-size bodies. creepycollection.com, the online source for all your pro-haunting and animatronic needs. You'll find Creepy Collection props in many venues, from yard haunts to major screen parks to movie production and even crime scene investigation. Featuring FearFlex technology, Creepy Collection is taking the static out of static. For your gore and more, that's Creepy Collection at www.creepycollection.com.
And we're back to the Roundtable of Terror here on the Big Scary Show, talking with Craig Hines from Dark Imaginings, who wrote this fascinating book called Gateway of the Gods. Did ancient aliens exist? Do they have the means to save the planet from clues hidden in the ancient past? Who knows? I wanted to ask you this, Craig. I know Storm a few weeks ago covered Necronomicon, you know, which is the big study of all things Lovecraft, up Rhode Island's kind of favorite son up there. Were you ever influenced by, did you ever read any Lovecraft, or are you a fan, or things like that?
Oh, I am a big fan of Lovecraft, and I can definitely say he's influential. Not like some people I've encountered where they actually take some of his information and believe that, you know, he was actually writing about real things. You know, I still hold that he was truly writing fiction. But what was influential were some of his ideas and what drew me to a lot of his material, especially at the time I was doing a lot of the research, sort of going back through his stories and realizing some of the things that he had in there, like the idea that the ancient gods existed in dimensions unseen, and that they weren't from outer space but from out of space. And so that was influential in my thinking as far as the book, because as I was studying on theoretical quantum physics, they do argue the idea about superstring theory or M theory and brain theory, which puts forth the idea of trying to find a unified theory that would explain, right now they don't have this unified, like you have Einsteinian relativity versus, theoretical quantum physics, and the two actually don't mesh together, so they need a unification. And what these theories propose is that our universe is actually either one of many or that it exists in a multidimensional universe, so that we could actually live in our four-dimensional world, three spatial dimensions and one temporal of time, and be completely unaware that, just a millimeter away from us is a whole other dimension that we've never encountered or never recognized or have no way of currently measuring, and that theoretically there could even be beings existing in these other dimensions that we would never see. So, I mean, it definitely opened up, the possibility of, with the idea of these gateways and the angels or the gods, going to and from the heavenly realm, if the heavenly, dimension is actually one of these, other dimensions in a multiverse.
Sure.
And, part of where I get into the book also is the idea of electronic voice phenomena known as EVP and paranormal investigations, where the idea of if people are legitimately recording voices of the deceased or of what they believe to be the deceased, some of that could actually be a bleed through from some of these other dimensions, because a way of looking at it is essentially whenever you hear some of these voices that are recorded, the investigators at the time don't recognize anybody's there. They don't hear anything. It's only whenever they hear it later on. And so, they were unaware of any ghostly presence at the time, but the ghost, the voice that's on there, seems to be aware of them. They can see that person, the investigator. Sometimes they're telling them, get out or help me. There was even, I remember hearing one funny EVP where an investigator was fumbling around in the dark for the light switch, and he tripped and fell down the stairs, and you hear the tumble and everything. And he was the only one in that section of the building at the time, but after you hear him crash at the bottom, you hear another voice go, are you all right? So it's kind of interesting whenever the idea of how they could see us but we couldn't see them, and how that plays into the idea of the quantum physics and the higher dimensions, is that if you were a two-dimensional being existing in a two-dimensional flatland, you could move around and you could measure everything in your two-dimensional space. But anything that's existing in the third dimension would be completely foreign to you. You might have a few glimpses of it or something like that, but you would never actually get a full idea of what that object is. You would only see slivers of it in that two-dimensional universe. And so your ability to recognize what that is severely limited. However, that three-dimensional being, if it was us, can look down at that two-dimensional world, and we can see all of it. We can see, the shapes of everything. We can see their positioning and all that. So, if we're talking about these higher dimensions and things, what if, these gods or these ghosts and other things are actually operating on a different dimensional level that's still close enough to us that they can interact, but they're just on a slightly different frequency, so that we're they're outside of our perception, but they can still perceive us.
One of my questions, and we've had paranormal investigators on our show before, is, and it was a question that, frankly, I never got a satisfactory answer for, the devices that they use to record things like EVPs, how do we know they work? I mean, how do we know that it's this, or how do we know that ghosts, for lack of a better word, can be seen with a spectrometer or something that measures magnetic fields or something like that? I mean, could it just be perhaps that the reason we don't see them all the time is we just don't have the right equipment?
Well, and that could definitely be. I mean, another possibility is that there really are no ghosts and there's nothing. It's just people mistakenly identifying these things as ghosts.
Sure.
People who
hear things because somebody says, now listen here, you'll be able to hear the word boo. for lack of something, and you hear a sound, and sure enough, sounds like boo. It could sound like screw. It could sound like shoe. It could sound like, you know, whatever, based on maybe perhaps being influenced by what somebody tells you to listen for.
Yeah, and that's part of the faults with, you know, people who do that, because you shouldn't be prompting the person to, or suggesting them.
If but I it, could, makes for, it makes for very successful TV shows, though.
If I could, yes. If I could chime in on this.
Because you are a paranormal investigator, if I am correct there.
You are correct. I am a paranormal investigator. And going back to what Craig was talking about with the EVPs, and, you know, some people will influence you as to what you might hear in an EVP. I was in the Moundsville, West Virginia, at the former West Virginia State Penitentiary a few years back. And my ex-wife and I were investigating the psychological ward of the prison. Nobody within 200 yards of us. She's taking pictures, and she thinks every time she sees an orb on the camera that it's a ghost. And I'm sitting there explaining to her that, no, it could be a bug, it could be dust, it could be a water drop, et cetera, et cetera. And at one point in time, she's going, look at this, look at this. And the recorder was sitting in my pocket. I just had a little digital recorder sitting in my pocket. And I said, well, I was explaining to her what it could be. And then as I was reviewing that file later on the next day, I heard very clearly, it was almost an ethereal voice. Now, bear in mind that the microphone was maybe, you know, 8 to 10 inches from my mouth, and this voice sounded a little farther off than that, and it clearly said, what did you get? I've played that for numerous people without telling them what I heard, and they all have heard the same thing.
No, just, you know, not that I'm doubting you or anything, but did the voice happen to sound anything like, could it have been a radio frequency that got picked up for just a moment? Or, because you know how that has a certain sound, or was it clearly, it sounded like just a regular conversation somebody was having, like, there in that place?
It was almost, I wouldn't say it was a clear, normal conversation voice. It had an ethereal quality to it. It was, I mean, could it have possibly been a radio signal? I'm not going to discount that it could have been. But what are the chances of me getting a radio signal at that point in time that said, what did you get?
Well, you know, true. Although there's probably a lot more signals and things going around than we ever even realize. You know, so it's one of those, you know, I'd have to hear it myself. And even then, probably at best, I'd just say, well, we don't know.
Right.
You know, and I'd rather have somebody give an honest answer like that than say, yep, definitely a ghost.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I'm a hopeful skeptic.
Yeah. But so, I mean, there's all sorts of things. You know, part of, you know, my biggest gripe, or not even necessarily a gripe, but just what I think needs to be done more, is whenever people are conducting these investigations, for instance, you mentioned about the orbs and capturing them in, like, digital cameras and things. So many people get them, you know, in still photography, but to me, you know, that's not good enough, because it could be a bug. It could be all sorts of numerous other things, as you explained, where it still doesn't necessarily explain things, but what might help better is, okay, let's say we had video footage of it. Now, you still might have an orb, but maybe you could tell from the movement of it, oh, that's moving around like an insect. Or, you know, you can see if it's moving like a dust particle with, you know, and stuff like that. From a still photograph, you're only dealing with one frame, so it leaves the viewer open to more interpretation as to what it is. And so I think that what we need are more devices and more data collected at these scenes. We need simultaneous still image, video, and audio recordings, other data as far as, you know, temperature and electromagnetic fields. And a lot of people do this, but I also realize a lot of people are doing this sort of in their own spare time as a hobby, and so they don't necessarily have all the equipment or the manpower to set all this up and to, you know, conduct a scientific experiment. But that's why I sort of hope that maybe the scientific community would take it more seriously, you know, and just, you know, humor me with the idea of, well, maybe EVPs are an indication of, you know, an extra-dimensional universe.
Right.
And so maybe they could start setting up lab experiments for something like that. But right now, it's still not really taken seriously, unfortunately, because there are so many TV shows and things like that where The people, it aggravates me whenever they're misusing equipment and stuff, whether they're using a non-contact thermometer and saying, oh, I'm getting a cold spot here. It's like, you fool, you're just picking up the temperature of the wall. You're not getting the actual temperature of that cold spot that you claim a ghost is in at that place. But
do you think that there are actual, quote-unquote, government experiments looking into things like that? Because, people like, what's his name, Whitley Strieber, or the other gentleman that's on with George Norrie all the time, I cannot remember his name at the moment, who talk about, DARPA and, laboratories, Area 51 for, throwing something out there. Are there, or do you think, in your opinion, that there are small little factions out there actually trying to find out this information, that they're just kind of keeping it maybe hush-hush?
Well, I definitely think that the government has experimented. I mean, we know about things,
Manhattan Project or...
Yeah, or, MK Ultra or Project Stargate, which was dealing with remote viewing. And so we know that the government has spent, millions or billions of dollars over decades actually researching into, psychic phenomena and things like that. Mm-hmm. And I feel like, if we are to take some of the people that were involved with these at their word, then the government, kept it going because they did feel that they were getting some sort of results and things with it. Now, what's actually going on nowadays, I mean, we don't know. A lot of those programs, the only reason we know about them is because they've either been declassified or they've ended, and so there's nothing really happening with them anymore. So I am curious as to what we don't know is going on. But then again, with how much the government's cracking down on whistleblowers and everyone else coming out about, any sort of surveillance and stuff like that, I mean, who knows? It could be maybe another 20 or 30 years before we find anything out.
Sure. Unfortunately, we're going to have to start winding this down time-wise. Time waits for no man as they speak. Any last questions for Craig Hines, Storm, Jim?
Well, Craig, in what you've been researching and things you found and stories you tell, is there one category that people would throw things into paranormal that you think is just more imagination than anything which could be influencing?
It's hard to say. I mean, one specific category. I mean, because
To throw things out: psychics, Bigfoot, the weird sounds over certain areas of certain countries. Is there something like that which just jumps out and goes, people keep saying they got stuff, and it's just buck kiss?
Unfortunately, that's, I think, the majority of the things. But it doesn't mean that there isn't some sort of kernel in there that's still worthy of investigation. For instance, there's so many false claims about, Bigfoot or Sasquatch and things like that. And I have friends that, research and go on investigations for that. And, cryptozoology, I think that it's a legitimate field worthy of study. I know it sort of becomes a laughingstock because there are so many hoaxes and bad information out there. But, the idea of, there's some sort of creature that, we've heard about in history, I think, I'm still open to the idea of that. I haven't ruled anything like that out, but my biggest complaints are whenever people are unwilling to change their views whenever they're presented with some of the evidence. With the research I did for my book, a lot of it dealt with ancient aliens and things like that. And I always try to say it's like people try to group me in with ancient alien theories. And I try to stress it's not really quite that. I mean, we'll say alien as far as extraterrestrial, not being of Earth. And even then, I still have a big old question mark next to it because, I still hold it. We could find out that none of this is actually true. But it's the idea of what upsets me is whenever people know that they don't have the credentials or they purposely mislead their audience. And they just make it that much more difficult so that people trying to do the legitimate research into these are having a more difficult time being taken seriously or getting the actual information out there because all the other people are just muddying up the waters with all of this false information.
Jim, final questions?
Nope.
Very cool. Well, Craig, it's been a pleasure to have you on. This is the part of the roundtable we affectionately call the plugs. We know that you have something to do with the haunt industry regarding Dark Imaginings. Give us Dark Imaginings in 30 seconds or so, and we'll give you a chance to plug the book where it can be found, picked up, and all that good stuff.
Sure. Well, Dark Imaginings is your one-stop shop for whether you need changing portraits, including custom portraits, haunted house website design, graphics, augmented reality effects to help sell your T-shirts or your marketing.
What is augmented reality? We touched on it briefly when you were on the show a few months back.
Sure. It's basically a new technology. We're one of the first in the industry to actually come out with it for the haunt industry. But it's essentially taking, whether it's your marketing materials or things like your T-shirts for your haunt, and what we can do is create an effect that works on people's mobile devices like their smartphones or their tablets, so that whenever they hold their phone's camera up to the image, like their poster or the T-shirt, it'll actually trigger an effect that works. And so, for instance, I did one for Ghoulie Manor where tentacles burst out of the shirt, so you know it comes out of their logo. Or we did one for HauntCon for last year with the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and so we have a chainsaw coming out of the T-shirt. So we do different effects like that.
Fascinating stuff. And I have seen the app for the Ghoulie Manor shirt at Transworld, I believe, and that was really, really neat. I enjoyed that. Where can people reach you? Where can people find copies of this book, maybe get a little website work done, maybe find out more about augmented reality, or pick up a copy of Gateway of the Gods?
Sure. Well, for all the haunt-related stuff, they can go to darkimaginings.com, or they can also go to paranormalportraits.com. That'll get you there. And so that has all the information for our haunt industry clients. And as far as the book, you can either order it directly from me and I'll autograph it. You can go to gatewayofthegods.com. And it's also available on amazon.com, Barnes & Noble. You can even order it at your local bookstore. Just tell them you'd like to order it and they can get it for you. There's also Kindle and Nook editions of it, so you can get an ebook version if you don't want the paperback.
Nice. Well, as I said, I'm only about 2 to 3 chapters in, and after this conversation, I'm going to probably spend half the night reading up a little bit more of this. But we want to thank Craig Hines up in Pittsburgh for taking the time to speak to the Big Scary Show's Roundtable of Terror. It's been a fascinating discussion, and unfortunately, I've taken my tinfoil socks off now, so I think that, you know,
they're going to get you.
They're going to get me if I'm not careful. I'll just have to have some sort of mystical charm to protect me. But I do want to thank Storm for being here.
And I will confirm that I'll deny any involvement in Operation Drawn Butter, where the government trained crustaceans to build ziggurats at Area 51.
You weren't supposed to know about that.
That's why I confirmed that I deny that.
Exactly. I see.
The unknown scare actor.
They already got me.
Well, they obviously have gotten the haunt rocker Jerry Vane because he is not here. No doubt under interrogation at Area 51 by the Grays. My name is Drew Badger. I am down in the Deep South where, you know, there's just so much crazy stuff going on here the government won't even touch us. Thank you again for listening to the Roundtable of Terror here on the Big Scary Show.
Remember your worst nightmares? What is it that fills you with dread? Do you hear things go bump in the night? Well, it's time. It's time to face your fears. Brought to you by Dark Spectre Custom Couture. Check out Nez's work at www.darkspectre.com. Couture for the creatures of the night.
Greetings, haunters. The unknown scare actor here. In light of recent events, I went searching around the internet and I found a little something. And what I found is amusing, or it's unnerving, depending on how you look at it. It says here, a disturbing piece was published in the Journal of Clinical Psychiatry. In it is a study that claims that people who are anti-government or believe in conspiracies about the government are suffering from a condition called anti-government phobia, AGP.
meaning that anyone who has a distaste for the government, the way it operates, its policies, and believes there is a particular force behind it, must be mentally ill. Well, if that's the case, then all of us are okay now, because as of this recording, there was no government. So how can you have an anti-government phobia? They're shut down. So any AGPs out there, you're 100% okay and completely sane. This is the Unknown Scare Actor.
Always remember one thing, Haunters. Everyone is afraid of something.
Are you feeling just a little bit crazy? Are you looking for the right costume to match that craziness? Then you need to go to Von Caron Productions and check out the Insane Ensemble. If you've got a mad scientist just ready to start working on a monster, you've got to check out the Psychosurgical Coat. If you're ready just to start butchering people up, they've got a dissection smock. Or if you think you're just a little bit too crazy and need to be restrained, how about a commitment coat? Von Caron Productions and the Insane Ensemble. Committed to haunters who expect quality. And remember, Halloween is but once all year. Von Caron Productions. Check them out at www.voncaron.com. That's VONCHARON, Von Caron Productions.
Hello, everybody. Drew Badger here, live in beautiful Franklin, Wisconsin, just south of Milwaukee. The temperature's about, I'm guessing, 50. Slightly cloudy, been sunny on and off. It is an unbelievable view that we have here at a place they call The Rock. And there happens to be a really cool little haunt that they started up last year. And I came up here, put on a little actor workshop, started talking to some folks. And I've got Mike and Joe Zimmerman here. How are you guys doing?
We're doing great, well. Drew.
Good. We had a little talk here about The Hill Has Eyes. It's kind of a play off the old movie, Hills Have Eyes, and Hills Have Eyes 2, and however many sequels. What was kind of the genesis of deciding to take a beautiful area like this, which actually is an old landfill with a ski slope on it, of all things, and turn it into not only a sports complex that you have done called The Rock, and but now you've got this haunt here. What made you decide to put a haunt out here on a side of an old landfill, which is in itself a kind of a cool story,
right?
Even if that wasn't the story.
Yeah, I mean, for starters, Joe and I were brothers. We grew up watching, you know, Michael Myers, Halloween, Freddy Krueger.
Children of the Corn.
Children of the Corn, you know, so, like, we're really sort of gearheads around Halloween. Love it. So when I took this property over, it was just a natural disaster. It was an old landfill. Had a great storyline built in. There literally was a mobile home community here, small 2-3 person family that lived at the bottom. It was a total junkyard. And when you looked at it, you just sort of said, this is kind of a story in the making, right, Joe?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great fit. You know, it previously was a landfill, and, you know, for us, it's a great opportunity to take a story that has a lot of true underlines and obviously elaborate on them, but it's a great foundation to what we think is an excellent haunt.
Was there kind of an underlying story with the mobile home down there? Was there, like, you know, he's an old crazy guy that lives out there with 100 cats and people have disappeared or anything like that? Or was it just something you came up with the whole story on your own?
Yeah, so, like, in the beginning, we know we wanted to do this at some point in our careers. But when, you know, Joe and I were sitting here saying, okay, we've got bills to pay, what do? We said, let's you know, hark in a haunted house, which is incredibly hard for starters. But then we actually hired a consultant.
Leonard?
Yeah, Leonard.
Leonard Pickett.
Yep. And he kind of started getting our brains churning about what, you know, what the potential was here. You know, we're brand new to the industry, so he kind of gave us his perspective on how to run a haunt. And that, I think, kicked us off to building this thing, right?
Yeah, they laid a great foundation. He did a great job of, you know, from a business perspective and a haunt owner perspective to, you know, help us understand what to look out for, what to do, what not to do, and how to set it up.
Right. And last year was your first year, and as we all know, 2012 was a, let's just face it, was a bad year for haunts all around. But from what you guys were saying, you actually had a pretty good year.
Yeah, we did 6,000 visitors. We got our bills paid, and we were... You know, our haunt is outdoors, so we knew if weather hit us, we would be, you know, in our pockets. But we got decent weather, and it turned out great. We're real close to Milwaukee, and that helped out a lot. Did a lot of marketing, And it turned out to be pretty good for the first year, getting all our bills paid.
Now, was it mostly because you were a novel, you were brand new, and everybody just kind of came to see you guys? Or did the word of mouth spread, and it was like, hey, this is actually pretty cool?
It's a good question. I don't know the answer to that. I wish I did. I'd say, you know, we spent, like, this was Leonard's recommendation. You had this ratio of marketing dollars you spend per headcount, and it actually worked out pretty good. So we pumped a ton of money into marketing.
Excellent. So you're looking at year two now. You've got a new crop of actors. You got some from last year. You've expanded a little bit, it looks like, from last year, and you've made some improvements and changed some things and all. If somebody were to come out here from Milwaukee or points east, west, north, or south, well, obviously not east because you got the lake, but what would they expect when they came here? What are the areas that they go through, and how's it work? You've got a real unique little selling point to this haunt with the chair that I think is just really, really cool.
Yeah, so, I mean, for starters, we're outside, which makes, I think, that makes this haunt unique. But then we've got four attractions, and what we thought would be best is if we storylined it. So we don't throw clowns at it.
Thank you for no clowns.
No clowns. I'd love to say no booze, but we did booze the first week, and that didn't go well, so we don't do that anymore.
Thank you.
But the storyline, we built the storyline. It's got purpose. Mm-hmm. So we've got four attractions. That kind of, you know, the story just keeps building on each other. And, you know, yeah, what's unique is what we call the scare lift. It's the chair lift. And, you know, I don't know if that had a huge, if that was a huge selling point, but our sense is it was.
Yeah.
So. I had some of your actors who were here last year telling me that there were people who wussed out on the trails. They'd make it through one, they wouldn't make it through the other, but they would ask, "Can we still ride the scare lift up to the top of the hill?" And you were letting them because they'd paid a ticket and all that. But I think that's probably is a big selling point. You guys should probably capitalize on that. You're probably the only haunt. You're the only haunt that I personally know that incorporates a ski lift into their haunt itself and is a major part of it.
Yeah, no, I mean I think the scare lift, and if you. When we operated, we actually shut down. We had run a ski hill here, too. And when we took the property over, we just assumed the chair lift was in decent working order, ran the haunt, and then we found out it failed all these inspections. So, it truly was a scare lift that first ride up. But we've since fixed that. So I think part of it is reputation. I think Milwaukee, they know this area. They know it was a junkyard. They knew that it was kind of a scary place to be. And that the chairlift itself was, you know, not necessarily, you know, in working order. So, but all that's been improved now, and we're looking to build upon what we did last year.
Yeah, the other thing about the chairlift is it's cool and it sounds cool and it's a great selling point, but it's also a huge headache. You know, it can really make or break your haunt too. There's a lot of detail that needs to go into making sure that your throughput's good, and so it adds a different layer of complexity to our haunt that, quite frankly. Without it, we wouldn't have as many limitations as we do. So we've got to be really thoughtful in how we do things and the time frame in which people go through it.
Sure. And I think the convenience also, as you said, with, you know, getting people here, you're right here off, is it I-94,
guess,
and the highway, the other highway that runs right past here. So you're driving down the road, and all of a sudden, hey, let's stop off and check out this haunt. You know, what could possibly go wrong, right? Except you're going through two horribly haunted trails and a chairlift, and you got a maze at the very end.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, we're 45 minutes from O'Hare. Downtown Milwaukee is about 12 minutes away, so we got a really unique, and like you said, we're off the freeway. We got a really unique spot.
So for people who may be driving up and down 94, if you're from Chicago, if you're from Milwaukee, you're from Kenosha, Racine, any place around Cedarburg, whatever, and you want to come give the Hill Has Eyes a try, maybe get an idea of ticket prices, schedules, photographs, little description of the haunt here and there, how can people get that information, websites, social media, et cetera?
Yeah, I mean, primarily we've got a great website that we just redesigned, hillhaseyes.com. Also, we do just a ton of updates on our Facebook page, which is The Rock Sports Complex. And, I mean, we totally redo our Facebook page, and we even, every night, if there's an incident where somebody pees their pants, we feature that on the social media site.
Nice.
So,
I like that.
Yeah, so we keep that the Facebook page pretty active.
The Hall of Shame is always a great, great incentive to keep going. I like that. Well, gentlemen, again, I wish you guys nothing but success here. Joe Zimmerman, Mike Zimmerman here in beautiful, and this is one of the coolest views I have seen in a long time for a haunted house.
And we're literally on one of the highest points in the area, it looks like. But here at the Hill Has Eyes in beautiful Franklin, Wisconsin, for the Big Scary Show, my name is Drew Badger, and I am out.
Prelude to a nightmare. Prelude to a nightmare on the Big Scary Show.
Okay, Haunters, the Unknown Scarecrow here, live at Scarefest in Lexington, Kentucky in 2013, and I can't talk yet because I worked late last night at the Dent Schoolhouse. Well, I'm wandering the vendor floor here, and I come across the original Pumpkin Teeth with Bob Connor. Bob, how are you?
Oh, fine, thank you.
So how's the con been treating you so far?
Oh, it's an amazing con. This is one of our favorites that we definitely have to make to every year.
Absolutely. For those people that aren't familiar with the original Pumpkin Teeth, can you tell our listeners a little bit about them?
Original pumpkin teeth are basically just that. They're teeth that you can embed into your pumpkin, squash, gourd. People also use them for mask making, ceramic type products, all kinds of forms of things. But they're just teeth in different sizes, from fangs to buck teeth to zombie to bloody. We're trying to cover the whole gamut.
What possessed you to create pumpkin teeth?
I had entered a Halloween pumpkin carving contest probably about 11, 12 years ago now, and I was trying to carve an alien-looking pumpkin with about 200 teeth in total. I'd been working on it for hours. By the time I got to the end, I was working on the last few teeth, and I accidentally cut them off. So I took the old toothpick, stuck the teeth back in, went to the contest. The judges were looking at the pumpkin from afar and were like, "Oh, wow, alien," I heard one of them say. And then they get up and they're looking, and all of a sudden one of them leans over and goes, "Oh, but did you break off a couple of teeth?" And I go, "Yeah." He goes, "And you didn't redo the whole pumpkin?" Well, nevertheless, I lost the contest. But that made me instantly think of pumpkin teeth for some reason, and then went online to see if there was such a thing, and started doing patenting processes and trying to start a business, and here we are.
Well, it looks like you've expanded quite a bit. I'm seeing glow-in-the-dark and zombie-type teeth, bloody teeth. What did you originally start with?
We started with just the original white standard fangs. Then we had so many people commenting about how a lot of people were into Halloween, but not necessarily scary. So then we came up with the buck teeth, which were kind of, not so scary, so they could make some happy entity pumpkins. Then after that, by popular demand also, glow-in-the-dark popped up, because every time we'd go somewhere, people were like, "Well, do you have glow-in-the-dark? Do you have glow-in-the-dark? Do you have glow-in-the-dark?" No, we don't, but we will soon. So then we went on the glow-in-the-dark. And then, once you start going into big business, stores prefer that you have, the more items you have, actually, the more they like that, which I would have never guessed. So, nevertheless, we try to keep inventing new styles and new styles of teeth to keep everybody happy and just to broaden our pumpkin teeth horizon.
Okay. Is there anything on the back burner or in the works that you're going to come up with for the future that you can talk about?
Well, there's one thing we're working on right now that I can't really go on into. That's movie placement. So we're going to be getting some product placement, I can say that much, but it's going to be in a major film. And there's going to be several scenes with the pumpkin teeth in during the whole movie, so we're really happy and excited about that. So that should get a little bit of attention for us, or towards us.
That's awesome. Looking forward to eventually finding out and seeing them in the film. I know you can't divulge that information now, but if you give the Big Scary Show the opportunity to let that news be known when you can let it be known, we would be happy to broadcast it to our listeners.
Oh, definitely, definitely.
I guess, I see you've expanded a little bit more. You've got a few other types of products. What else do you offer?
I actually fly someone out to the I fly someone to do the shows with me, usually a makeup artist, usually Rob Fitz. He's got like 23 to 30 movies. He's IMB listed. Did the makeup artwork for, say, The Perfect Storm, Ted. I'm drawing a blank, but so many fantastic movies. Meet Joe Black. So I fly him out, and he fits people with fangs. So then we still have the niche. So we basically sell fangs for people, and then also fangs, of course, or teeth for your pumpkins.
Okay. Well, Bob, thank you for taking the time to talk to the Big Scary Show. And I want to let the listeners know that I have a special prize that we're going to be giving out on a special occasion. We haven't decided what yet, but it's going to be a little bit more than our normal. I will tell you it involves the movie Legion. From that point, you'll just have to keep listening and trying to win. Bob, once again, thanks for talking to the Big Scary Show. Much luck to you in the future, and I love the product.
Oh, thank you, and thank you for having me. And anybody who didn't make it to the show or can't make it to any of these shows, they can go on Etsy, and all they have to do is type in the search box, just pumpkin teeth, and that'll take them right to our store. And we usually have some sort of special going on.
Awesome. It makes it simple to get to. Everybody knows Etsy. And I am the Unknown Scaractor with Bob Connor and the original Pumpkin Teeth, and I am out.
In a world of generic one-size masks.
Ugh, this mask is too tight for my head. I can't see.
Where you don't have time to wait to be scary.
You're taking too long. Just throw something on and get to your scene.
Darkest fears unlimited. Masks, props, and blood that will make your haunt scary.
All right, this mask fits perfect, and parts of it are even pulsating. Finally, I'm going to scare every night.
Darkest Fears Unlimited.com.
Hello, everybody. Drew Badger out here live on the road. I am in Forest Lake, Minnesota, having a really good time putting on an actor workshop at a particular haunt up here in the great upper Midwest. I am at Nightmare Hollow Scream Park with the owner, Gene Sockness. Gene, how are you doing?
Fabulous.
And you're opening up in early October as opposed to a lot of people who are already open. Tell us a little bit about what Nightmare Hollow Scream Park is. I mean, you've got a really beautiful location out here. There's a lot of horse stuff here, and it's really interesting based on what's juxtaposed right next door.
This is a harness park racing until the end of August. The horses leave the area. We turn it into Nightmare Hollow Scream Park with bonfires, Halloween decorations everywhere, a double-sided haunted house, a party barn with ghoulish cocktails, beer, concessions, DJs, and dancing. We have a music show, and this year we have, and a haunted hayride. And this year we added the Twin City Zombie Hunt, the first one in Minnesota with glow-in-the-dark paintballs.
Glow-in-the-dark paintballs. I've never seen those.
Yes.
What makes them glow-in-the-dark? I mean, do you have black light shining?
No black
on them,
lights. Or? They are glow-in-the-dark.
Oh,
they're more expensive.
Okay. Do they leave tracers when you fire them?
So yes.
Oh, that's cool.
Yes.
I'd like to see that.
Yep.
So you've been doing this for a while. How many years?
22 years. We started in 1992.
And how did you come to this place, which is a harness park? I assume you were somewhere else and then you came to this place, because this place hadn't been here 22 years.
No, this place is only 5 years old. I had rented the property prior of the woods and acreage behind the casino and horse barns. And now we're back home to our favorite spot.
Sounds fun. Do you get any of the traffic from the casino here? I mean, it's really interesting. I've never been to a haunt that, are you technically part of the casino package? I mean, somebody goes over to the casino, then they come over here, or is this something completely separate?
It is completely separate.
Okay. So do you get any traffic from the casino? People put their cards down long enough to come out here and get scared?
Not really. We don't really get that much traffic from the casino, but we bring traffic from this event to the casino.
Oh, I'm sure they love you then.
Yes.
You know, come out here and get scared and everything, and then go blow a few bucks playing some cards and watching some horse racing.
That, and they have fabulous food.
Yeah, I've sampled some of the casino's food this weekend, and it is great. Tell us a little bit about what your haunted house has got here. I mean, this seems to be more of a traditional haunted house with this room and then this room and then this room. What is kind of the theme that you have running through here?
On one side, we have the Carnival of Clowns, which is just crazy clowns with different
clowns.
Tricks
yep.
and treats and some. We do have the Ghost Bust as the clown, which, of course, everybody knows about that. And we have the Atmosphere FX projected pieces in the haunted house, along with live characters. One side is themed rooms.
Sure.
Like the dentist, the meat frozen heads.
Gotta have a dentist guy.
Yes.
Terrifying normally.
Yep. Toxic. And a vortex tunnel, and we have a cage maze after the haunted house, which is filled with fog. You do not have to attend that. There is a way to get out if you don't want to attend that.
Sure.
But most people like to attend that, and there's a chainsaw massacre in there.
Oh, lovely. Gotta love those chainsaws, too. Does one price get you in this? You can go through the haunted house, you can go through the cage maze, you can go on the hayride for one price, or do you have to buy separate?
Either or. You can buy a combo ticket for Nightmare Hollow Scream Park, everything, the haunted hayride, double-sided haunted house, vortex tunnel, cage maze, entertainment in the park, bonfires, etc. Or you can with the Twin Cities Zombie Hunt, or you can buy just the Nightmare Hollow Scream Park package.
Sounds like fun. Yep. Sounds like this is more of a destination type haunt where you'd come here and spend, you know, a couple of hours as opposed to going here and then going someplace else.
You can spend the evening here.
Excellent. We like that. For people interested, maybe traveling along I-35 between, you know, Duluth and the Twin Cities, or just passing through or in the area and just want more information, directions, maybe photographs, buying your tickets online and stuff, do you have a website, social media? How can people get a hold of you?
Yes, nightmarehalloween.com or Nightmare Halloween Facebook.
So look for them on Facebook at Nightmare Halloween or NightmareHalloween.com. That's a great, great domain name. I'm glad you guys got that. So I wish you nothing but success for the year 2013 here at the Nightmare Hollow Scream Park in beautiful Forest Lake, Minnesota, right next to the casino. This is Drew Badger getting ready to maybe go hit the cards, and I am out.
It's 2013. How do you keep up with all your customers who are on the go? The answer, HauntApps.com. HauntApps is designed to provide your haunted attraction with a direct line of communication to your customers via the iOS or iPhone and Android applications. Some features you will find with HauntApps include customized branding with your attraction's logos, an interface that works for your needs, iPad enhancement for the iOS, audio-video playback, direct communication, and the option for online ticketing. Let HauntApps do all the hard work so you can concentrate on scaring the customers. That's HauntApps.com for your mobile application needs.
Gravetone Productions, the final hour on the Big Scary Show.
Thank you.
As we slide back into the swamp where we hid the body, we would like to thank the following people and others. We'd like to thank Craig Hines for talking to us. You can find his book on Amazon.com and by going to DarkImaginings.com. We also want to thank The Hill Has Eyes, Frightmares at Buck Hill, and Nightmare Hollow Scream Park for talking about their respective attractions. And thanks to Bob Connor from Pumpkin Teeth. Get yours today at www.the-original-pumpkinteeth.com. Virgil Franklin, Master of the Ether Muse. Von Charon Productions. Von Charon, VonCharon.com. Screamline Studios at ScreamlineStudios.com. We'd also like to thank the Four Ghosts. Storm, catch his ramblings at HauntMinute.com. The Unknown Scare Actor, videos and more, UnknownScareActor.com. The Haunt Rocker Jerry Vane, be sure to pick up his latest CD, Virus 308, on JerryVane.com. And Drew Badger, actor, trainer, consultant, and more, rabidbadger.biz. Be sure to tell us what you think. Send feedback to us at feedback@bigscaryshow.com. And keep sending in those news items, news@bigscaryshow.com. Be sure to follow and like us on Facebook at facebook.com/bigscaryshow. Make sure to follow us on our new Twitter account, @TheBigScaryShow. We just may occasionally tweet out some information that you won't find anywhere else. Be sure to search for The Big Scary Show on iTunes. And while you're there, please give us a review. We would appreciate it a lot. Tune in next time when we bring you the latest news and information from the world of haunting and horror. And thank you once again for listening. Without you, we are nothing. Good night, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and others. This is The Big Scary Show.
The Big Scary Show is copyright Big Scary Show, LLC, and no rebroadcast of this show may be made without express permission of the owners. All music used on The Big Scary Show is used with expressed permission of the artists themselves.